All right, I want to thank Yul and Bruce for the opportunity to talk here today. I really appreciate that. I wanted to actually start, though, with a television commercial. A little different. Don't worry, Bruce, I'm not going to try to sell anyone any Ginsu knives or anything. This is relevant, but let's just watch this little commercial if it wants to start here. Here we go.
Forgot your receipt.
Checkout lines. Who needs them?
Have a nice day.
This is the future of e-business.
So, the technology in that commercial is pretty much here now. It's completely doable. The consumer products industry has really been working hard on standards and technology. And RFID in that space is here to stay, and it's all around us. What we're really interested in today, though, is what is the opportunity in the laboratories and in pathology for RFID. So before we get too far along with buzzwords, we want to get onto our next slide here and define what RFID is. So RFID, simply stated, radio frequency identification, is a technology that uses radio waves to automatically identify physical objects. So that's our basic definition of RFID. RFID is one of these technologies that's certainly gotten caught up in the hype cycle of technologies. This is defined by a consulting group where a technology emerges, leads to a peak of inflated expectations, and then the inevitable trough of disillusionment. And with RFID, I think we've passed the trough of disillusionment. We're on the slope of enlightened and productive applications, and that's what I'm going to share with you today. So I'm going to first start off with explaining the different types of RFID. It's very important, if we're going to understand how to use RFID, to understand passive versus active RFID, because that's really an essential distinction here. But then we'll look at how RFID has been used in the consumer product space, how it's starting to be used in healthcare and pathology to really change operations. And it's really a revolutionary type of technology. And then offer some perspectives on where this is all going. So it's important to ground this discussion in the fact that RFID is just another form of auto-identification. Very much, you know, it's a technology by which a physical object can be automatically identified. So very much in the same vein as barcodes, credit cards, biometrics, you know, retinal scans, voice recognition, these are all things by a technology by which a physical object is automatically identified. So, and it's important because we're not going to want to leap to RFID, and for many of our projects, when a barcode or something simpler, a credit card, a stripe type approach could work. The basics of RFID have been defined for 100 years. Hertz and Maxwell demonstrated that you have copper coils, you have an electromagnetic force generator, you can generate a little bit of current. And this current is going to be doing very useful things for us in RFID. It's going to be used to access data on microprocessors and then send a signal back to the reader to say what this object is. So a lot more on how it works in a moment. First of all, it's important to realize that RFID is not one of these technologies that's always, like voice recognition seemed to be, always 5 years away, 10 years away from being ready for prime time. This is a technology that's all around us. I interact with four pieces of RFID almost every single day. In my car, I get through my Masspike tolls with an active RFID transponder. I use passive RFID to pay for my gas with a mobile speed pass, to get through doors at the hospital with my hospital ID, and the new Boston subway passes now have RFID built into the pass itself, which is really a wonderful consumer-friendly technology. For example, for the subway pass, you just hold your whole wallet or purse up to the turnstile and walk through. There's no need to find it because the radio waves can penetrate right through the fabric of your wallet, right into your RFID chip. So a very consumer-friendly technology all around us right now. The RFID market in 2006 was about $4 billion globally. Healthcare in the U.S. made up only about $90 million of that market in 2006. However, if you look at what hospitals say they're going to do, about half the hospitals have RFID spending planned in the upcoming year. And that's up from just 10% 2 years ago. So there's really this big upswing in RFID interest in healthcare in general. And we'll look at why that is. And it's because people have found very useful applications in terms of equipment tracking, patient tracking, and especially process and capacity management. And we'll look at examples from Mass General and from other sites, examples of all of these very useful applications. So importantly, when we talk about RFID, we have to understand there are two main types of RFID, passive and active RFID. It's essential to understand them because they each have very different strengths and weaknesses. And that's going to be very important in deciding what type of RFID we want to use for our given application. The other thing we really have to consider is, could another auto ID technology, such as a barcode, suffice? Oftentimes, going to the latest and greatest technology when a simple barcode could work is the decision we have to make. So we're first going to talk about passive RFID, and this is the RFID that's probably 90% of the RFID tags that are produced globally are passive RFID tags. These are the ones, as we'll see, are used in a much more global systematic sense for a global supply chain management. So for a passive RFID system, there are three components: the tag, the reader, and the middleware. The tag, this is an example tag, one of the tags that we use at Mass General. It's a little bigger than a postage stamp. They can be made very, very small, but this is a sort of a big one. It has coils on it, and it has a microprocessor. Very thin, very durable. One of the reasons it's called a passive tag is because it's passively powered. There's no battery on there. It's going to get its power from the reader itself. The memory capacity of a tag, how much memory is on this little on the memory area of this microprocessor, generally is hundreds to thousands of characters, but it's really not limited. You can put as much memory as you want to on a tag. And one thing about passive RFID tags is they're relatively cheap. You can make them by the billions, and there are factories that are cranking them out by the billions now. So they're durable, they're cheap, and they can be made small. So the first step in a passive RFID system is energizing the tag. The tag doesn't have a battery, it needs energy. It gets energy from the reader. It creates that little bit of current in the tag, and that little bit of current will do useful things. It'll go get the data that's on the microprocessor and then send radio waves back to the reader. So the tag is sending, in this case, it's got information written on the tag, Jim Smith, Jim Smith's medical record number, and it's sending that information back to the reader. The reader's job is then to take this information and process it a little bit, but mostly just pass it on to the server or middleware. And the server and middleware is what's going to interact with you. It's going to display something, open an application, open a door for you, open your garage. That's what the server and middleware is really going to connect to the rest of the world. So this RFID signal is actually useful. So passive RFID, the key is cheap, durable, no battery. If an important consideration with passive RFID is to compare it to barcodes, because it's very similar to a barcode in many sense. If you have a passive RFID tag with 1234567 or a barcode with 1234567, whether you're getting the information to the reader via radio waves or reflected laser light, you're getting the same information back and forth. So it's really important to compare and contrast RFID and barcodes. Barcodes in general have had a pretty dismal adaptation rate and usefulness rate in healthcare. If we compare how the retail sector and healthcare have adopted something like a barcode, we can really see some differences. So with the retail sector, what happened before they really started using barcodes is they created a standard, the Universal Product Code, the UPC. They said, we're going to put it on every single product that's sold. We're going to use it at checkout. We're going to keep the workflow the same. We don't want to confuse anybody. If we make a mistake and the lime Jell-O's, you know, the wrong UPC, it's got the Jell-O pudding on it, that's not going to be a big deal. Minor monetary consequence of error. And they can measure things. They know success. Success is reduced labor costs and increased customer and revenue growth. If we compare that to the healthcare sector, we don't have an industry giant. We're a very fragmented industry. So we don't have standards. So as a result, we have barcodes on many things. If you go into a hospital, you'll see barcodes all over the place, but no one's actually scanning them or using them. There's 2D, 1D symbologies. They're everywhere. When we try to use them, we use them at the point of care often for medication administration, for point of care testing. But that generally introduces a new workflow. If we do something wrong, We can have a life-impacting error if we scan the wrong barcode, if we misprint a barcode. So there can be real serious errors. It's not the lime Jell-O versus the Jell-O pudding. And the success is difficult to measure. It's going to be nebulous things like better patient care, perhaps reduced errors that you can quantitate. But it's generally going to be very soft return on investment. So it's going to be difficult to make a case for it. We know, though, that barcodes reduce errors. This is just from some work we did at Mass General, just putting a 1D barcode on the wristband 15 months ago and asking people to use it for glucometry. What we noted is that patient ID errors dropped from about 1% to 3% when they were tapping in the numbers on the glucometer to 0% when they were scanning the barcodes. So barcodes work. It's just a question that can you get people to use them, and can you get people to actually to use them? So why is scanning a barcode so difficult? Here's sort of the process of barcoded wristbands versus RFID wristbands that we've been using in our pilots. For a barcoded wristband, first you got to find the wristband. It could be anywhere. There's probably an IV line that you have to get out of the way, perhaps. You have to contact the patient with some nosocomial infection risk, rotate the wristband to find the barcode. You know, there could be a bunch of barcodes. If some person like me put multiple barcodes on your wristband, you have to guess, you know, which one I need to scan. You have to ensure that it's flat, if it's not going to scan very well, if it's on a curved surface. And then soiled or wrinkled wristbands aren't going to work at all. So you may have to cut off the wristband and put a new one that will work. And our ingenious nurses figured out that it was difficult to scan wristbands, so their solution was to create a second wristband and put it on their nursing clipboard and just scan, blowing all JCO patient safety considerations out of the water completely. But they were getting their work done. They were, you know, this is workarounds are the modus operandi of medicine, unfortunately. If you compare that to scanning an RFID wristband, this is one of our RFID wristbands where the RFID tag is this little, you know, tag built into the fabric of the wristband. You point the reader within 3 inches of the wristband, it scans with a near 100% success rate. Through their clothing, through their arm, it can be on either side of their arm. As long as it's within range, the radio waves pass harmlessly through the patient's body and reflect back to the reader. So there are significant advantages there. If we compare a barcode versus a passive RFID tag, a lot of things are going to be on the side of the ledger of the passive RFID tag. They have a nearly flawless read rate. They're not going to be, it's not going to be a problem if they're wrinkled or smeared or dirty. They're readable through objects. There's no, you don't have to have line of sight like you would need for a barcode. You can put hundreds, if not thousands, of characters on one of these RFID tags. You can read hundreds, if not thousands, of tags per second. Any tags that are within range of the readers can be read. And the big differentiator, though, and why barcodes really need to be looked at as an attractive choice, is the marginal cost. A barcode is a font. I mean, it's Times Roman, it's Arial, it's the same kind of thing. So it's basically the cost of the label, you know, less than a penny a label or a penny a label. It's just the cost of the piece of paper. Well, there's real engineering that has to be done to make a passive RFID tag. And the tags that cost a nickel are the tags that are being produced by the billions for the supply chain management industry. The ones we want to use in healthcare are generally in the dollar range. So we really still have a pretty expensive proposition to use passive RFID in any huge sense in healthcare. It's like it's used in manufacturing right now. So passive RFID tags can be made in many forms. I've shown you just a couple. These are smart labels that we use for our blood bags and labels that we use for our patients, our patient ID wristbands. And those types of applications are programmed by going through something, a Zebra printer, that's a printer, but it's also an RFID reader and writer. So there's an RFID reader writer. So it prints the patient's name, Joe Smith, on the wristband, then it puts whatever we want on the wristband RFID tag at the same time. There are other different types of forms of RFID. So this is a passive RFID chip that goes right on the bottom of a test tube made by Maxell. And then International Paper and Georgia Pacific are starting to investigate building the RFID chips right into the fabric of packaging. So you essentially don't even know they're there. They're into the cardboard box. They're into whatever the consumer packaging is. This last example here is kind of interesting. There's a FDA-approved human implantable RFID tag now. It's a glass-encapsulated tag that can go in either your deltoids, as this gentleman is having done, or your forearm. It has a unique number in it, and it can be linked to your medical records. That's one of the things that VeriChip does. It links it to your online medical record. This particular gentleman is getting a tag at a bar in Barcelona, Spain. And so this bar, for their VIP customers, they'll plant a chip in your arm, link it to your credit card, link it to your ID, and next time you go to the bar, no need for your purse or wallet. You just read your tag, and you can pay for your drinks with your arm in the I can't remember the name of the beach club somewhere in Barcelona, Spain. So as frightening as that may all be with RFID tags, these are useful for other things than paying for your martini. RFID tags are really good at saying what is it, and perhaps where was it last. So a passive RFID tag generally encode an object's unique identity. They're passively powered. They don't have a battery, so their read range is generally pretty modest, inches to feet. They're generally used in handheld scanner-type applications, portal applications. We've all gone through these sort of portals in the Gap or libraries to make sure you've checked out the book or paid for your purchase. But the more common portal and the way RFID chips are really being used in any big way right now is portals at distribution centers, at manufacturing plants, at warehouses, and at stores to automatically do inventory. So the idea is this forklift with these cases with RFID tags goes right through the door, doesn't slow down, and all of these tags get read by this passive RFID reader that's sitting at the dock door. So this gives you instant visibility of your inventory throughout the global supply chain. And that's why, as we'll see, the Targets, the Walmart, the Department of Defense, these are all these people that are pushing RFID in a big way. Another application of interest is a smart shelf, and this is a shelf with a built-in passive RFID reader. So when you put packages into the smart shelf, you have instant inventory. It knows what's in there. It knows what's been removed. So these are applications where you want to know what is something and perhaps where was it last. If you want to know where something is right now, if you want to find somebody or find some piece of equipment, you're going to want to use active RFID, and that's what we're going to turn our attention to now. So an active RFID is going to be able to tell you not only what is something, but where is it right now. So these are really the tracking applications. And this is the Radiance tag. I didn't bring one, but it's about the size of a keychain. This is one of the active RFID tags that we're using at Mass General. The active RFID tag is a little different. It's an active tag. It's no longer passively powered, so it's got a battery on board, but it still has the chip and it has an antenna to produce the radio waves. This particular tag has Jim Smith and Jim Smith's unit number on it, and it's going to send, at regular intervals, radio waves out into space looking for a reader. So it's broadcasting the fact, I'm Jim Smith, here's my unit number. And if you have a reader network, this implies that you have a network of RFID readers, you can then locate that object in space. You can triangulate it from your readers and figure out where it is. So that's the job of the server and middleware. It knows that reader number 21 is located in operating room 37, so it's going to deduce when it feels a strong signal from Jim Smith that the patient Jim Smith is in operating room 37. So as we'll see, when we tie this to business intelligence, we're really going to have a powerful system for managing patients and managing things that we want to find. The reader network is an important consideration in active RFID. There are two different types of reader networks that we can use. One is based on our standard Wi-Fi connectivity. So this is what we have at Starbucks or our own houses, 802.11 type protocols. And this utilizes your existing wireless infrastructure. So you'd have a whole network of readers that use your existing wireless infrastructure. The problem with this approach is that you often need a lot more access points. Your general wireless functionality in your hospital requires a lot less wireless density than this type of approach if you want to find things at high resolution. The other type of network that's very popular is a proprietary network, and this is just a complete new network that you have to set up, completely separate from your current wireless infrastructure. And this can be quite costly. If you're lighting up your whole hospital, it's about $1 million, $1,000 a bed for a big hospital. So once we've figured out what reader we're going to use, it's important to think, do we really need active RFID? And active RFID is going to imply a much higher cost per tag. So the tags are going to be in the $10 to $100 range. The $10 tags are tags that are generally designed for short-term use and use only sort of single-use type tags. Well, the passive RFID tags are going to be much cheaper, from a nickel to a dollar per tag. The big differentiator here, though, is do we need location accuracy? Do we need to know where something is right now? If we're going to need to know that, we're going to want to use active RFID tags. It's the only thing we're going to get real-time accuracy to a couple of feet. So that's the big differentiator in what type of application you're going to use. Another way of classifying RFID tags is by their frequency. And by frequency, we're talking about the frequency that the reader and the tag interact with each other. So the passive RFID tags are generally the tags that have the low frequency or high frequency. They're not getting a lot of energy from their reader, and what that implies is they're not going to have a very long read range. So they reflect the radio waves that are sent back are going to be relatively weak because there's not a lot of power going on here. These are attractive, though, in healthcare because they penetrate water and tissue very well. So around patients, if you're going to implant one of these, if you're going to use it as a patient wristband, if you're going to use it in any setting where there's water, these make a lot of sense because they penetrate water and tissue well. They will have interferences with metal. So anything where there might be metal in between the reader and the tag, that wouldn't be a good choice. The other types of frequencies are UHF, or ultra-high frequency, and microwave frequency. And these tend to be either active or passive tags. Actually, probably 90% of the RFID tags in the world that are used right now are UHF tags that are passive RFID tags. Those are the ones that are used in sort of global supply chain management applications. They have that higher frequency, so they're going to actually have a higher read, a longer read range. So you can read all those crates as they're coming out of the factory, you know, at 10 to 30 feet away, because things are not going to be, the crate's always not going to be right next to the reader when it's on the forklift just going out of the factory. So that's important to have a long read range. Many of the active RFID technologies, and the one that we'll talk about today, is actually in the UHF range as well. They're either in UHF or microwave range. The usefulness of the active tagged type applications is that they're often effective around metals. So there's tons of metal in the operating room, tons of metal, you know, really everywhere in healthcare. And this can be a real advantage for these. They have less interference. So the third classification of tags is memory. And memory is it a read-write tag or is it a read-only tag? And we've been talking so far about read-write tags, so tags that have Jim Smith and Jim Smith's unit number on them. In reality, these tags are almost, you know, very rarely used. It sounds like a great idea. You put the whole patient's medical record on their wristband. They're walking around with their allergies, their meds. But in practice, there are reasons not to do that. One, you have to, you know, program all that information. You have to worry about it being up to date, and you have to worry about data corruption. The more typical use of RFID is to use a read-only tag, to just use a unique number that comes programmed at the factory and use that for identification. So how can you use a read-only unique integer to identify an asset? Well, you do that with middleware. So what we've been talking about so far have just been to use, you know, a tag that has information on it and you pass it across. In this sense, all we have a tag that comes programmed by the factory with a big unique number. And these are usually 96-bit numbers. For this purpose, we'll just say a 10-digit unique number. This is passed along to the middleware, and the middleware uses that number to look up and see what patient or what specimen or what unique item is linked to that number. So this approach here really implies a step there where the patient or the specimen gets commissioned, the tag gets commissioned, and you associate this big number with Jim Smith. And then forever, when you scan and find this number, you go and grab whatever Jim Smith's information you need. So commissioning the tag, but it takes a lot of the complexity out of the equation because you're just getting the number that comes programmed from the factory. You don't have to worry about programming the tag yourself. There's a lot more, though, to RFID than just the reader and the tag. The cost of the tag receives a lot of the focus, but it's really just the marginal cost, we have to remember, the cost of one more unit. The cost that we really have to also think about is, you know, what's the cost of the user interface? We're probably not going to be able to just link this in to our enterprise application. We're going to need a layer of middleware and perhaps a proprietary application to view this data. There's not going to be buckets for this in our enterprise application. Some of the new information and the new tags that are coming out are combining RFID with sensor technologies. So you can have sensors for virtually anything out there. One example would have a sensor that sense changes in acceleration. And these tags are becoming very popular because it saves battery life. If you have a sensor that only an active RFID tag that only broadcasts itself when it moves, that's going to save battery life. So when if you're looking for an ultrasound machine, if it's just sitting there in OR37, you don't want to be wearing down the battery life by constantly telling the readers in the vicinity what it is. You only really care about that it transmit when it moves. The other type of tags that are being used in a big way are ones that sense temperature. So this is an example of a tag that wakes up every day and writes its temperature in its memory. So you throw this in a shipping container for produce that's coming from South America, and you have this instant record of exactly what temperature the produce was at throughout its lifespan. So these are tag developments that are happening right now. So what about the industry? What about industry? How has industry used RFID? Well, the first thing they did was to create a standard and to create a substitute for that universal product code that made barcoding so successful. What they've done is create the EPC, the electronic product code. This is an absolutely unique number that identifies every item in their supply chain. So they have, you know, you can uniquely identify a huge number of items with the EPC down to the single pack of Juicy Fruit gum that comes from Wrigley's. So they can identify the case of Juicy Fruit gum as it comes by the dock doors and the passive RFID reader, but the goal is really to get down to the item level. And this is really being pushed, this whole mandate for standards and use of RFID, by the big boys in this industry. The Walmarts, the Targets, the Albertsons, the Department of Defense are putting mandates on their suppliers to RFID tag what's coming in and out of Walmart stores. So why is Walmart so interested in RFID technology? Not because it's cool or neat. They're no interest in that, I'm sure. It's because they have massive supply chain costs in the billions and billions of dollars. And right now, about 1,000 of the 2,600 Walmart stores are RFID-enabled. And they have about 500 suppliers that send them RFID-tagged items. What they've noted is that an RFID-enabled store has reduced out-of-costs, stock costs, and inventory costs. So really dramatic improvements for Walmart, at least. And early adopters have achieved cost savings about 1% of sales. So for Walmart, that's about $4 billion a year. So it's really significant impact on the bottom line that the consumer products industry and the manufacturing industries are starting to see. We'll now shift gears and talk a little about our experience with RFID at Mass General. And I'll talk about two projects, one asset tracking in the ORs and one that blood transfusion safety. So one where we're using active RFID and the second where we're using passive RFID. So the Operating the Human of the Future is sort of the brainchild of Dr. James Stahl and a cast of dozens up at MGH. And it's a very important area in all hospitals, of course. Operating rooms generate about 40% of a hospital's revenues, and cases rarely start on time. For us, it's about 25% of cases start on time. So the ORF for us is both a laboratory and a working OR, and it's really a test site for looking at new operative and perioperative technologies, including RFID. And the question with RFID is, can we use RFID to improve operational efficiencies by revealing new relationships between items? So we want to look at our assets and see how they interact. So for this, of course, if we want to know where an asset is at all periods of time, we're going to use active RFID, not passive RFID. So here we're using the Radiance indoor positioning system, and it's a combination of active RFID and infrared to very tightly localize objects. And it uses a proprietary network, not 802.11-type network, and there's a custom software to map the assets. So here's the white building of the Mass General campus, and you can see the blue triangles are patients, the green triangles are some staff members, and the purple triangle is an ultrasound machine that someone might need. So we're tagging our high-value assets with active RFID, whether it be a patient, a surgical staff, a cleaning crew, which is actually very important to turn over operating rooms, and equipment, mobile equipment that's needed for various cases that we want to be able to find quickly. So just being able to see where stuff is on a map is kind of useful, but the real utility here is putting business intelligence along with it. To have a rule in your middleware that says, you know, after the patient and surgeon, after their RFID tags have left OR38, that we automatically text page the cleaning staff to go clean that operating room. So there's really no delay there. Another rule would be after the cleaning crew has been present for 30 minutes and have left, the room is clean, and then alert the nurse via her text message sent to her cell phone. And a final rule would be something like, if the ultrasound machine is not in OR53, we know that it's going to be needed for the next case by the operating room schedule, and they've set that up, then alert materials management via pager to find the ultrasound machine and bring it to OR53. The results so far has been incredibly encouraging. It's really, we've spread to all the 70 operating rooms now from just three where it started. The early results showed clearly that there was a time between cases is much faster in the ORF, about 28 minutes faster between cases. And so an additional one-hour case can be done for each three cases done in the ORF. So quite a big advantage in terms of turning operating rooms over and over, just because you know where your assets are and the assets there's visibility to the assets. The other example that I want to show uses passive RFID. And this is a work in the blood transfusion service. And we all know that blood, although much, much safer than it has been in the past, is still a hazardous thing to get at any hospital. One in 38,000 transfusions is with ABO-incompatible blood. And big studies like the Q-probe studies have shown that our wrong blood in tube is about 1 in 2,000. So you're probably much more likely to get your Mott's applesauce, you know, correctly the price at your checkout counter rather than your blood for the right pre-transfusion sample. And the issue with a mistransfusion is that mistransfusions are typically slip errors. They're errors that are caused by distractions or failure to pay attention at a critical moment. And that moment in blood transfusion is generally the bedside clerical check. We've been doing it the same way for the last 50 years, and it's done at a time, you know, when you're giving blood, the patient's often crashing, and it's not a time to calmly compare unit numbers in the operating room. But luckily, these slip-type errors are the ones that are most amenable to technology. So Dr. Sunny Zeke and others at Mass General have been using our passive RFID tags on the wristband. So the wristband tags are passive RFID. And they've been putting these blood labels on the blood. It's another passive RFID tag on the blood bag. And there must be a match between this and this for the patient to get the blood. So you walk the blood into the room. We don't need to know where the blood is every second and every moment, so we don't need to use an active RFID system. We have a passive RFID reader that you immediately, when you walk into the room, you just run it by, and it's going to know who the patient is already that's in there. And if it's the wrong blood, it's going to the wrong unit number on that blood, it's going to put up an alert and say, stop, no match. There's a sound that comes on. So it's very clear to the user that they made a mistake and they really have to rethink things. So really making it an automatic part of the process and not making it a new thing to scan and a new part of the bedside ritual is key for this version of RFID. One caveat for RFID in healthcare is just because you can doesn't mean you should. The JCO has made, you know, wrong-sided, wrong-site surgery a serious patient safety issue, and of course it is a very serious issue. So the marketplace has risen to the challenge, and we have solution one, which is SurgiChip, which is essentially one of these passive RFID tags that gets programmed with whatever surgery you're going to have. So, for instance, take out left kidney would be, you know, your surgery. It gets stuck on the patient's arm, and then when you get to the operating room, the surgeon or someone in the surgical staff has a handheld computer with an RFID tag. They scan that. Hopefully they see take out left kidney, and that's what they're supposed to be doing. Great. So it all, you know, improves patient safety. The cost is about $100,000 of startup costs, and the tags cost about $250 each. So if you're doing 40,000 surgeries a year, you're talking another $100,000 of cost. You also, of course, have to consider it has to get that information from somewhere. So it's got to interface to your surgical information system, and you've got to maintain it, and you've got to train people on how to use the system. The approach we've taken at Mass General is slightly lower tech. We've used the Sharpie pen for this to comply with this JCO initiative, and the cost is cheaper, and training is considerably less because most people have been to grammar school, so... Key is right technology for the right role, whether it's a Sharpie, active RFID, or passive RFID. Incremental rollout due to the immaturity of the technology. We've got to realize, especially in the healthcare, the tags that are being made for healthcare are not the same tags that are being made in the consumer product space. They're not making them by the billions. It's still a niche type application. And today's tags are very likely to be replaced with improved versions. Test and trial is very important. You can show that something works. You know, it does. I'm sure that SurgiChip does work and improves things. But you've really got to demonstrate operational effectiveness, not just efficacy. One thing that we've also learned is that it's really important to understand the public perceptions of RFID. This is a quote from a California state senator. And how would you like it if, for instance, one day you realized that your underwear was reporting on your whereabouts? And this sounds way out of the mainstream, but it's really not. If you type RFID into Google, about 40% of the results you'll get on that first screen have to do with privacy violations and RFID. So this is something that's really out there. There have been boycotts of big companies, Gillette and Benetton, due to their planned use of item tagging of RFID. So to put an RFID chip on every product in their store. And that commercial that I started with is an example. The reason you may not have seen that commercial, it was pulled very quickly after the boycott started happening. And IBM was gracious enough to let me to play it today. But it's not a commercial that you're likely to see anytime soon. So the idea is that if passive ID tags have this unique ID, then every product you buy with a passive RFID is potentially traceable to you. So if, one, the unique ID is stored with your ID and credit card number, and of course it would be on checkout. That's a natural thing to assume. And then, two, if they leave a functional ID tag on your product as it leaves the store, And no one's planning to rip all these tags off of all these products as they left the store. So the initial plans were to leave functional ID tags on products. So the idea is you're walking down the street, and someone can scan you with an RFID reader and potentially find out a lot about you. They can find out what books you're carrying, what underwear you've got on, you know, if you've got an artificial knee. This concept of the rogue RFID reader is really out there. And it's really true. I mean, if it's an absolutely unique number and it's linked to your name in a database, you know, that sweater that's found at the murder scene, you might get a strange phone call asking questions about it. So potentially any unauthorized rogue reader could read a tag. You can encrypt the data, but of course that adds to complexity, cost, and people are looking at that now, but it doesn't seem to be a very feasible way of doing this. You could also detach or deactivate it, and that really doesn't work very well for consumer products industry and this checkout without having to stop by. So the bottom line for us in healthcare is that this is a real risk and a real public perception that's out there. And so we have to address this on any RFID project that we think about. What's the public perception going to be? For the last few minutes, I'd like to talk about what the opportunity is for RFID and anatomic pathology. And anatomic pathology, we, of course, have a lot of stuff. We have this whole universe of stuff to get a specimen processed. So we have a large number of high-value assets, whether they be specimens, cassettes, or slides, and they all need to be uniquely identified. We also have a lot of points in our process where patient ID is essential, and places where we make mistakes, you know, accessioning specimens, making cassettes, labeling blocks, cutting blocks, slide labeling, slide relabeling. These are all points where we all know in our organizations we make mistakes. Another complication of pathology that we don't have in many other industries is that our high-value assets are often immersed in caustic chemicals or stains. So we really have to find a technology that will work in that sort of setting. Step one, though, is really not to think about RFID. It's to really understand our process. And I think Steve's going to talk much more about this in the next 45 minutes. But really, before we consider it, we have to really map our process and understand it. This is a workflow map that we did of the MGH histopathology lab when we were sort of getting ready for AutoID and getting ready for sort of the next generation of AutoID. And it's really important. You've got to map your current process and then identify steps where you think AutoID might make a difference. Start measuring. If we're going to change something, we have to be able to measure the whether it had an effect. Decide what our goals are for the project. And then it's really important to assess whether barcodes can accomplish the same thing. I think that's especially in this process here where we have hundreds of thousands of items, it would be exceedingly expensive to jump into RFID too quickly. So another big consideration here is it's got to interface with our existing systems. If this is a siloed application that we create that doesn't interact with anybody else, it's not going to be very useful. It's going to create a beautiful audit trail, but we can't really do anything with it. We want it to drive workflow. So I want to turn quickly to some work that Yule did, some really elegant work that he did when he was at Mass General before moving on to bigger and better things with Bruce, where he really made us use barcodes throughout the entire process of specimen processing and has really improved patient safety. And what Yule did was to modify our APLIS, our PowerPath APLIS, to permit tracking and verification of the identity of the specimen throughout the process. So the barcoded specimen labels, the requisitions, barcoded on the blocks, and barcodes on the slides. Some of the principles that Yule used in his approach were these important principles. Just in time, to have the workflow really be driven by the barcode. So you scan the cassette or scan the block, and it creates the slide labels. You don't have barcoded labels waiting around to be put on the wrong slide. It's actually done in a just-in-time methodology. In addition, Yule didn't create a data silo. He modified our APLIS, so all this data could actually interact with the APLIS and drive the workflow. So that was very important. And, well, it's not a data silo, and it actually drives the workflow. So the next thing to really figure out here is what's the opportunity for improving this process with RFID. So when we think about RFID, when you look at what goes on in a histopathology lab, especially our lab now, we have a lot of people scanning things. There's a lot of people, you know, looking at blocks and scanning it. We've tried to make it as user-friendly as possible, but it's still not, you know, as user-friendly as possible. What you really want is to making the scanning of the cassette and slide a really automatic part of the process. And you can do that with RFID. You can build it into the workstations that people use, and you can really make that part of the process very seamless to people. You can also really enhance the granularity of the audit trail. We don't capture a lot of things in most of our APLISs. We capture when it was accessioned, when it was grossed, when it was signed out. We don't capture all these other events, when the slides were stains, when the slides were cut. So we're going to need some help in doing this. So instead of just hypothesizing how we might do this, I actually turned to one of the groups that is actually doing this right now. And they're doing this in pilot mode right now. And I was kind enough, Krista Cruz, the administrative director down at ProPath in Dallas, was kind enough to talk to me about what they're doing. They're a high-volume AP practice based in Dallas. They use Cerner CoPath Plus, and prior to working with RFID, much like Yule did at Mass General, they implemented barcodes in a big way. So they barcoded the histo text, they barcoded the slides, they barcoded cassettes and requisitions, very much like was done at MGH by Yule. So what they've done in pilot mode is to use a passive RFID tagging system. So they have a glass encapsulated tag. It has to be a very durable tag, of course. It lives in the cassettes. The tags that they're using currently cost $1 or $2 per tag, so that would be prohibitive in any real way. We use 300,000 cassettes per year at MGH. I'm sure it's similar for ProPath. The tags come pre-encoded with serial numbers. We're not writing, colon biopsy or any information about the specimen on the tag. All they're doing is commissioning the tag. So there's a step where they associate the tag with a case by scanning the barcode container label and then using an RFID reader to scan the RFID tag. So associating that unique number with the specimen. So then the cassette tag is going to be used at numerous points throughout the cycle to drive patient ID, workflow, and create an audit trail. And to do that, they're going to have to use middleware. You can't just plug these barcode or these RFID readers right into Cerner CoPath Plus. You really need, for all of these applications, a layer of middleware. That the middleware is going to do two things for you. It's going to permit really detailed tracking information. All this stuff, all these steps, the staining, the microtomy, the embedding, there's no place for that in any of the APLIS systems. But you can create a place for it, and they're using Sybase RFID Anywhere as their middleware. And additionally, this Sybase RFID Anywhere can easily interact with CoPath Plus. So they've written calls into CoPath Plus to go and get me the retrieve the orders for the slides, the special stains, et cetera. So not only are they, creating an audit trail, they're not just doing something superfluously, they're actually driving workflow. And that's very important. I think in Yule's application, it drives workflow, and in their application, it absolutely drives workflow. So last couple of slides, what's the value proposition for RFID in pathology? It's still very unclear. RFID really should be considered if you have a value proposition or a mandate. What's the value proposition? Hard ROI is hard to come by. I mean, you really have to measure things and really get a sense for what the cost of your errors are and how you can really improve that with RFID. There's a lot of soft ROI, of course. Employee satisfaction, they don't like to, scan all those barcodes all the time. And potentially patient safety, but a lot of that is very hard to quantitate and hard to justify a huge expense that it would take to put passive RFID tags on all your assets in pathology. There is a mandate out there. It's a national patient safety goal that's proposed for 2008, which says the organization investigates and initiates the planning for the use of technology for the assist with a patient ID. So that's a JCO standard that's out there. They're mainly talking about barcoding, but it's clear that they really want us to get to the level of supermarket checkout eventually and really start identifying our assets better. So last slide, I think Don Rucker already used this quote. He attributed it to Niels Bohr. I'll give it to Yogi just to balance that out. And it is very tough to figure out where this is going in healthcare. Healthcare is very fragmented. There's not many standards. There's very little accountability or leadership sort of at a national level. And we also really need to accommodate the parallel processes that are present in healthcare. Healthcare is not an assembly line. But as we know, this is from sort of the engineering work, as networks get more complex, you really need standards. And we've been getting this, our network in healthcare is getting more and more complex over the years, yet we don't have a good set of standards that the consumer products industry, the manufacturing industry, takes as sort of ingrained to their workflow. The next thing is we really have to re-engineer and standardize our processes. And I think Steve's going to talk a lot about this, and this is really the key. Although we say we don't have assembly lines, we really do. We have to find out where they are and standardize our workflow because we really do have assembly lines in healthcare and in pathology. And then lastly, we're going to collect a lot of data with RFID. If we can't do anything with it, you might as well have not collected it. So the data analytics are really just as important as the data gathering in all these things. So I want to just thank you all for your attention. Appreciate that.